Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I am your host, Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But we're now streaming live on YouTube, on Twitch, and on the Everything app. You can see us live and in person there. We're also streaming audio only on the iHeartRadio app, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. And you can always find us on the Odyssey app, where it's free to download, free to listen. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. I hope you've been staying a little bit warmer than yours truly.
I'm not.
Any of us or anybody out there who's been following the show, I have been out at the Toy Drive at the Regalia Shopping Center. Make sure you guys head on over there. Great time seeing everybody out there and just collecting things for the people.
Gabe Kuhn will also be out there both today and tomorrow, so you can go see Gabe as well. Do we have trivia tonight? Any Cerrito Entertainment events?
You know it. Of course we do. We are back down in South Haven at Dan McGinnis for some general knowledge trivia. I didn't get to tune in this morning because I was, well, at the Toy Drive. How'd Righter Than Right trivia go today?
We were
rolling.
We're just moving on. We're 1-0 this week.
That's all you got to do.
That's all we're focused on is being 1-0 this week. We were indeed 1-0 this week.
Beautiful.
Mainly because my opponent picked the wrong category every time. He definitely got the tougher questions. That's part of the game, though.
Hey, turn the ball over, and it happens.
Back on his usual Thursday spot, my company writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day. What's happening?
Oh, man. I don't know how it is. I don't know how it is for you, but we have like that it's just miserable. It's like 38 and raining.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we're dealing with here.
Yep.
It's not good, man.
It's awful.
It's not good.
Absolutely awful. But we do have a great weekend of sports, so we will start, of course, with our tasting menu, get into a couple of the other topics about the games, a couple of factoids that I wanted to share with Cobb as well, and see if that changes our opinion whatsoever. Obviously, with it being championship weekend, Cobb and I got to talk through the scenarios and how we think this could play out in terms of the playoff rankings and the playoff selections. So we'll discuss that. Then Eric Hastein's going to join the program. Grizzlies concluded that four-game road trip. They went 3-1. They'll return home tomorrow night to take on the Clippers. That game, of course, you can hear on 92.9 FM ESPN at 7 p.m. with Eric. We'll have pregame at 6:30. We'll talk about the Grizzlies here in just a moment as well. Get into the list during the second hour. I wanted to get into the comments from the ESPN story yesterday about the negative value, perhaps, of Ja Morant, of LaMelo Ball, of Trey Young. I wanted to get your thoughts, Cobb, because I'm a little woke on a few things out there, so I wanted to talk through that with you as well. Then Jason Smith's going to join the program. We'll get his thoughts on the coaching carousel, what he's expecting from the Memphis search, talk about all that and more with Jason. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I think let's start first here, Cobb, because, listen, I know it's I know it's not officially the playoffs. I think we got a playoff game tonight on Thursday Night Football. I think there's a chance Al might be excited for football tonight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could you not be? I feel like this is classic sort of Dallas Cowboys intrigue where they're sitting here, what, 6-5? They're giving you a little bit of hope.
6-5 and one. And that was a good tie. The Packers had a bad tie. The Cowboys had a good tie.
Well, but this isn't this where they break your hearts? Isn't this where the Cowboys break your heart?
This is where you might be 1,000% spot on. I'm kind of Cowboys curious right now. And I think the biggest reason why is, as George will tell us, Quentin Williams, very good football player. And as they have added pieces to that defense, like, they don't look fake good anymore. Like, this is legitimate. Now they've got CD healthy. Pickens has been an absolute animal. They're really running the football pretty well. But to your point, maybe that's just exactly like what a Cowboys season is. Like, builds you up as we get into December, and you start to think, like, maybe this team is pretty good. And then here comes the collapse. But the thing is, it wasn't like beating the Chiefs was a fluke, and it wasn't like beating the Eagles was a fluke.
Yeah, going to Detroit, though, I mean, that's kind of next level because, okay, if you're looking through the Cowboys and what they've accomplished, you know, who is good that they've actually beaten on the road? Now they got to go on the road.
Their best road win is probably, let's see, I'm trying to do it from memory, so I guess I got to put up the schedule now. Their best road win's probably their road wins are a blowout. Let's see, they lost. Their best road win is the loss to the Eagles on the opening night.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's their best road win is that Eagles loss.
There you go. So, I don't know. What's the spread on this game tonight, and so do you have a side on it?
3.5. Here's the thing. As the Giants just continue to be aggravating, I found myself, I've always had a lot of golf stock. I found myself, like, kind of secondarily adopting the Lions. They got problems, man. Like, it's. I know everyone wants to do the easy thing of, well, look, they lost Ben Johnson, and look at the job that he's doing with the Bears. It's more than that. We had some friends and family over on Thanksgiving, and one of my little brother's friends was pointing out, it's like, I watch the Lions a lot. It's like, they're just up front. They're not as dominant as they were, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. And without that, like, they're so dependent on getting the running game going and then taking play action shots. And then the receivers have been in and out of the lineup. George, do we have an Amon-Ra update?
I haven't seen anything, but let me take a quick look for you.
They still score, but their offense doesn't feel as... Like, there were times last year where you would watch them and you're like, man, they just felt like there was nothing that could stop them. It feels like now everything... Like, they move the ball, but everything feels much more difficult. And so that's why I'm very intrigued by tonight, because it does feel like the Lions are kind of going down, whereas the Cowboys are going up. But to your point, Cowboys on the road have been a completely different thing, and it's like, I don't know if I really want to bet against Dan Campbell in a back-against-the-wall situation.
Very weird Amon-Ra update
okay.
from Schefter.
Well, that kind of checks out.
Quote, Amon-Ra St. Brown did not practice this week due to his ankle sprain, and a return next week was considered the, quote, more realistic expectation. But the team also knows St. Brown is one of the NFL's toughest players, and if anyone can come back sooner, it's him.
All right, so this is my interpretation of that. He's going to shoot it up and see how it feels in warm-ups.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and the...
Because he did
Sam
not come
LaPorta
back
injury.
Last week, right? Yeah, LaPorta, that's another big loss.
I have him in fantasy, and that killed me. It killed me, so it's definitely killing Detroit, too. You mentioned the Giants a second ago. I was curious, what was your opinion of... Okay, the whole world is clutching their pearls over the fact that Jackson Dart is taking hits. And it's like, yo, did you guys not watch this guy play college football? This is what he does.
No, this is the classic. You are so spot on. There are still, I do think as a society, we're doing a better job. We used to be way too tribal with football. It was like, you could either watch football on Saturdays and you were a college football person, or you were an NFL person and you didn't really pay attention to the other. And I kept screaming from the rooftops, you can watch both. Like, it's possible. Because 1,000%, I am now just an Ole Miss fan from the last 3 years ago, because every time the Giants play, I just yell at Jackson, get out! Like, that's all I do. And every Ole Miss fan does
hilarious.
The same thing.
The other night, we're trying to start fights every time Jackson Dart gets hit. And then we're having these post-game, like, moratorium, like, these you know, huge post-game press conference questions about it and all this stuff. And I'm like, this is just what he does. He seeks out the contact. He's not going to slide. He's not going to get out of bounds. Like, anyway, it's just funny to me that the NFL, like, whenever the NFL learns something about a college player
correct.
That we've known,
like,
for years.
No, you're spot on. I will say this, though. Even though playing in the SEC is physical, that is a different level at the NFL. I mean, look at just the size, the speed. Like, every guy can kill you. Like, my whole thing with Jackson is I want to shut him down the rest of the year because this is a lost year for me. If Malik Nabers were out there, if Scadaboo were out there, like, the pieces that you're hoping to build around, if those guys were out there, I would see the value. But now we're at the point where he's already had one diagnosed concussion, and let me tell you how many extra have been involved. Many, many. There's only been one concussion test he wasn't able to beat. I'll say that. So there's no point, and all you're just doing is he's not at this stage in his career. He has proven, like, he's not going to get down, and so, like, I've seen enough to have optimism. I do not want to ruin him. This season's lost. Let's get as good of a draft pick as possible. There's going to be a bunch of franchises that are going to probably be quarterback hungry, and they're going to have to reach, and so. Maybe you can build the roster that way. Get some guys that want to trade up. Like, you got to think at this point, Cleveland's probably going to want to trade up. The Raiders are probably going to have to want to trade up. Like, there's a lot of these teams that are going to have to do that. So lose as much as possible and then try to restock that way.
I do feel like there's value, though, in a rookie quarterback getting live game reps in the NFL. Like,
I totally agree. I am not someone that believes you learn from the sideline. My problem with him, though, is he know, like, do you think that no coach has ever told him you got to protect your body? Like, the Gruden quarterback thing when they, in the draft process, like, Gruden was just, like, ripping him about, like, what you're doing's unsafe. Like, it's, and so he knows it, but he can't stop. So my thing is, let's just
protect him from himself.
Correct. Protect him from himself. And hopefully next year there's some maturity and he learns a little bit and we can move on. The only risk in my plan is Jameis might win a game or two. So
ooh,
maybe just
what?
Go back to Russ.
Oh, okay.
I mean, listen, wow. When everyone gets to go, well, if you go back to Russ, you'll lose the locker room. Guys, we've already had our number three pick suspended twice in a season for just not showing up. Like, how good's the culture
yeah.
there
yeah,
anyway?
Yeah, the locker room vibes are a little, you know, maybe you want to wreck the locker room vibe.
Yeah,
let's just
maybe
see how low this thing can go, you know?
Yeah. So overall,
I'm sorry you're dealing with that.
It's okay. Like, now, it's now at the point where I can check out. Like, that's the thing. It's like, for a while, I was a little worried that Kafka, because I don't have the highest opinion of Kafka, I was really worried that he might back his way into the full-time job. I think that ship has sailed, and now the way that it's going, it could get so bad that Shane, who everybody thought was going to be safe, the GM, he could be gone too. All right, now let's get to Friday, because Friday we've got interesting matchups. So if we start at 6 o'clock in college hoops, we got Kentucky and Gonzaga. Cobb is over at CBSSports.com, has written about the Mark Pope honeymoon, and I think it's interesting – in this, if we want to use a little bit of football brain, you've written that the honeymoon's over, and I think that's true. I don't know if it's necessarily the game results, but this is what I also think is going to be fascinating to watch. Kentucky, much like Penn State did in football, these teams that went all LSU this past year, Kentucky went all in on this roster. Now, it's December. It's the first week of December. There's a ton of basketball left. But this does not look like a team that we're going to be sitting there talking about in March, like, can they win at all? I am curious to see, are these coaches, when these teams that went all in on the roster, like, Are they going to be held accountable?
They're held accountable to the standard of what the price tag was for that roster. I mean, you're already seeing that bill come due in Kentucky, where the furor over their start is always, it's always mentioned in a gripe or complaint about how poor Kentucky's playing. Hey, this is a $22 million roster. And that's, I mean, when you spend that much on a roster and you get this as your product, it leads to you to James Franklin getting fired at Penn State, Brian Kelly getting shown the door midway through the season at LSU. I mean, I agree. I don't necessarily think Mark Pope's on the hot seat, but yeah, I do think you're held accountable to the extent that the roster was paid for in that sort of grandiose, exorbitant sort of way. Like, fans know that stuff, and they're gonna, they're not gonna let you get by with crappy results when they know how much you spent on the team.
I guess so. This is the other question, because I was kind of thinking about it as I was watching that game. Was that Tuesday? Yeah, that was Tuesday, right? Because that was the first night of the ACC-SEC Challenge. The Louisville game, the final score to me was not indicative. Like, that, I felt like Louisville convincingly beat them.
You mean Arkansas?
No, I'm talking about Kentucky's losses. So if we take their three losses, like, the final score wound up around like 7 or 8, I think. Let's see. I think it was 96-88. But, I mean, weren't they down like 20 for a large portion of the game?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Louisville had a 20-point lead twice in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Kentucky also got the breaks beat off of them by Michigan State. And,
so
and
that
then
one, that,
lose at
that,
home.
That's the one I want to – I kind of want to talk about. That one I'm a little bit more apt to kind of throw that one out, because Michigan State shot the basketball like otherworldly. And I just think that was one I could sit there and go, all right, that just kind of happens. Michigan State, which is not a great shooting team, if they're going to hit, like, I think they were like, at one point, I think in the half, like, they were close to like a school record for like threes made.
Yeah, I think they hit 50% of their threes, which you just don't expect from a Tom Izzo team. But nonetheless, I mean, it underscores Kentucky's got problems, man. In this game tonight against Gonzaga and Nashville, if they lose it, I think you're going to see a full-on meltdown within the Kentucky basketball fan base, because at that point they will be 0-4 against teams in the top 200 of the net. Their best win right now is against the net, like 229. It's just, there's nothing of substance on this resume, and they still have to play St. John's and Indiana before SEC play. So it's bleak. It's bleak right now for Kentucky basketball.
And I think, though, this is kind of the other question that I had, is like, I was watching college basketball. So we wrap up the SEC-ACC challenge. It's one of those weird ones where the SEC wins 9-7, but didn't you feel like spiritually the ACC won? Because it felt like almost every high-profile game, the ACC won.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. I think it was a full-on confirmation of everything I've been saying over the first month of the season, which is that the SEC is not nearly as dominant as it was a season ago. And the ACC is actually going to have a chance, to get a respectable number of teams into the NCAA tournament, because the conference hierarchy is at least a little bit more even across the board this year. However, I will say it is heavily skewed towards the high major leagues right now. I mean, the Big East is bad. But the other four look pretty strong, and there's not a lot of room at the table for the mid-majors right now. But, yeah, I mean, we're looking at more of a 9-10 bid SEC, which would be down 4 or 5 from last year. So that's a pretty significant downgrade in the level of play, from the league.
Yeah, so what I was kind of curious about, because I thought coming into the year, I actually thought last year was going to be kind of a precursor of what we might see, and that this would be my explanation for it. I'm still not convinced that the SEC can have the football title contender every single year. Like, I just think if these other schools max out, they have more money, and if it's still going to be this money race, I think that they're going to struggle to beat like the USC's, the Ohio State's, the Michigan's. Like, if it just becomes a who has more cash, they're not going to win that. With the exception being Texas and Texas A&M, And the problems that I've had with those two is they're historically the two programs that do the least with the most. And so when those are your guys that can probably compete financially at the highest level, that's a concern. But then when you look at it throughout, I go, it makes sense to me that the league is as deep as it is because everyone to some degree is trying in football. Like, the lowest paid football roster is probably, what, $9 million with Arkansas, probably somewhere around there. Like, that's still, that's going to be way higher than everyone's.
But in football and men's basketball, the only SEC teams that have like just accepted and are okay with being bad is like LSU basketball. Like that's like that's like the only one that, you can look at and be like, all right, they're just.
By the way,
you're saying Arkansas football, you could argue. But.
Shout out to our boy McMahon. He has scheduled his way. What are they like 7-0 right now?
Right. Yeah, with the marquee win being over Boston College in overtime last night. Right.
Where are they in the net? I'm sorry, where are they in KenPom?
Because
I do think every SEC team was inside the top 90.
Well, they're 25 at KenPom, and they are 16 in the net. So, I mean, like your worst, what is theoretically your worst team is actually looking all right. You could say South Carolina basketball. You could say South Carolina and LSU basketball are the two that
My spidey sense also says with LSU and credit to Matt McMahon, like, cause he's got a tough job. That smells like some metric manipulation. Yeah. Here we go. 96-60 win over Tarleton State, 93-58 win over New Orleans, who we saw last night up close in person, 98-81 win over FIU, 107-81 over Alcorn, Nebraska, Omaha, 93-73. Decent-ish win against Drake, 71-62. 93-63 win against DePaul. And then that win against BC last night in overtime. That just screams of manipulating the metrics.
That's what Kentucky's trying to do, but they're failing to do it because they're scheduling all these sub-200 teams. They're beating up on them. But then, I mean, the other part of that is you schedule these big-time teams, and you got to win at least a couple of those games, and they're not.
The other thing I was going to say also about my theory, though, is I thought it made sense that the SEC kind of leveled up in basketball because they are going to care about it, and now they're spending at it, and I thought they were going to spend at a level that everybody else wasn't comfortable with. But it appears what happened was the SEC motivated, like, it got, whether it be the basketball powers that were maybe resistant to it, or maybe everyone just came to the conclusion, all right, this is the way it's got to be. It seems to me everybody else rose up and met them, and now the talent's more spread out. Because when you look over at KenPom, it still seems like the SEC's the deepest conference with the highest volume of good teams. But I do not right now. If you're sitting there going, you got to pick a title contender, I guess I'm going with Florida again. But like, do you feel good about that?
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. So yeah, your likelihood of a title winning team coming out of the SEC right now looks fairly slim. Although, I mean, I like Alabama. I still think they could be really good. But I would pick a Big Ten team. And the Big Ten hadn't won a title since Izzo in what, 2002?
I believe that 2000.
Yeah,
team Cleaves. I mean,
it's been a quarter century, but they have a deeper list of title contenders right now than the SEC. The one that surprises me, especially in light of like your theory, which I think there's some truth to that. Like the spending is probably more equal now, but you always heard over the last year this idea that the Big East was about to really level up because they don't have to pay for football rosters. Well, they can put every ounce of their revenue sharing into basketball. They may not have the full 20.5 at every Big East school because they don't have the big TV contracts, but they can put whatever they do have into men's basketball, and you would have thought that the Big East would be performing better.
Your boy did not.
Well, remember,
Norlander wrote about it, right? Like, it was
right.
It was clearly a Big East talking point. And I also think a couple of things are probably also true. Like, I think there was this point where the Big East was probably wildly overrated. Like, remember what they got, like, was it 14 teams once? Like, they had one of those situations. Maybe it was like 13 out of 16, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that was always overinflated. Like, that was people kind of having nostalgia for a conference. But I also don't think the league is as bad as it has been getting reputation-wise the last 2 years. But
well,
I just don't buy the whole...
right now, man.
I do, because for me to buy into their theory, I have to accept that the additional NIL revenue is not going to be a part of the story, and I just don't believe that.
Yeah.
And I think that's like what we're seeing. Like that to me is... Okay, so now we've got... Let's get to our Friday Night Football, because we'll save Grizzlies Clippers for Eric. So we have Troy at JMU. That's at 6 p.m. ESPN. Over on the Network of Stars, CBS Sports Network, Kennesaw State and Jacksonville State. That's also at 6. Then we have the American title at 7 o'clock on ABC, North Texas at Tulane. And then we have UNLV at Boise. So, of course, the couple of noteworthy moments, at least for the local crowd. So Jerry Mack's team will go and try to win on the road a conference championship at Jacksonville State. I think what's interesting to me about the coaching search so far is, and granted, this is all, sometimes you kind of have to filter through. But based on who I've talked to, if you made me pin down who I thought was leading, it would be Huff. But as John has pointed out, and we were talking a little bit off the air, like, if you want Charles Huff,
you could have that done already.
Why not? Now,
I mean, you could have Buster Faulkner done already too.
I guess what I would say is, since the timing of it all happened, it wasn't like hiring somebody today was going to save signing day. Like, you know, I mean, that ship had sailed. So I guess you could make the argument they want to do right by the candidates and at least give Jerry the in-person interview before making the final decision. But that feels to me like a stretch.
It does, because you had signing day this week. And if you wanted to, you could have had one of these other coaches in place who is not coaching in a conference championship game this week. So I'm with you. I do think it, the fact that they have not made a hire yet, leads me to believe, yeah, Jerry Mack's got to be in serious consideration for this job. Because why else would you not have announced already? You know, because, I mean, the only reason you wouldn't is because this guy's got a conference championship game to coach in tomorrow night.
I guess the other argument would be because I'm not saying Memphis, when Ryan notified them that he was leaving, I'm not saying, like, I think that they were, whenever it happened, like Saturday night or Sunday, that they were like stunned. But
they hadn't done as much legwork as correct. You probably so would you could, normally. You could it didn't talk, look like he was getting a job. They weren't going to fire him, you know. So, like, I'm sure Ed Scott knew who the five or six names were going to be, but I doubt he had really gone down the road very far of
and what
interviewing.
What you could talk me into is, based on that, hey, we know this was a condensed time frame. Like, let's make sure everything checks out. Like, maybe one more background check with Turnkey. I don't know if they're a Turnkey school or not, but you know what I mean? Like, I guess, but that feels like that doesn't take this long.
Right. Now, I mean, I think if it's Jerry Mack, I think it's a good hire. Like, I said all along, like, the names that we've heard in this Memphis coaching search are all good hires who could excite the fan base. And then you throw in the fact, I mean, Jerry Mack's from Memphis, is he not? Like,
yes.
I mean, how cool is that? But it wouldn't just be like, well, he's from here. And
my only negative with Jerry Mack was he was on the 2011 coaching staff, and that is without a doubt the worst Memphis football team I've ever seen.
Oh, geez, was that at Larry Porter's last year?
Yeah, I think that was Larry's last year. And it was 12 his last year. Those two teams were god awful. Now, he's a receivers coach. Like, what is it? Yeah, I mean, like, that's the only, so far, that's the only negative I have on him.
Well, you know, he saw the program in the pits.
I don't want
he
that smell.
He saw the program in the pits, and now he can lead it to the peak.
Yeah, he's never going to let it get story. There again. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know. I think he'd be a great hire, man. I mean, he's done an amazing job at Kennesaw State, which is a, you know, relatively new FBS program, and they, they don't have a lot of money to play with or throw around, and here they are playing for a league title on the cusp of a 10-win season. So you pair that guy with Memphis's resources. He knows the city. He knows the lay of the land. I think it'd be great. But by the same token, I'd be excited for – at least, I guess Tyson Helton's out of the mix from what was reported.
So,
today.
Like,
was
that was the only, like, to me, if you want to go, all right, let's connect the dots, Tyson dropping out and still no announcement, and we find out that the final interview with Jerry's on Saturday, like, to me, like, okay, what's the new terminology? Is the search focusing on Jerry Mack?
Right. He's their primary target.
Circling in. Like, I can't figure out what the order of operations.
Have they narrowed it down yet? Or are we fully narrowed? Or are we there?
Well, it's like the search is circling around. It seems to me circling happens before focusing, which happens before targeting, which happens before finalizing.
Did you mention narrowing?
Is narrowing at the top of the list. That happens first.
Yeah.
They're narrowing down their search to these groups.
And then
of
at
people.
Some point, you really got to hone in. Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
got to hone in.
All right. This is the other thing I was thinking about. So we have, I think it seems clear, the winner of North Texas and Tulane. They're going to be a playoff team.
Correct. And there's no debate. No debate.
All right. So here's the real question that I have as we get into the rest of championship weekend. Do you believe that the committee, by ranking JMU and not ranking Duke, do you believe that they sent the signal, even if Duke beats UVA, which would be UVA's at 17, I believe, correct?
Right.
So that would be another top 25 win. And JMU would only get to host, I think, JMU's like a 17-point favorite against Troy.
Even more than that, yeah.
Yeah, maybe three touchdowns, I think, now. So do you think that they signaled, as long as JMU handles business, Duke cannot pass them?
So long as nothing crazy happens. Yes, I think it's like an 80% chance. That's the case. James Madison, win and you're in. However... Well, okay, when you win and Duke win and you're in. But let's say it happened like this. Let's say James Madison only won by 3, and let's say, Duke wins, but there are scenarios there where the outcomes could be, polarized enough to where
Duke wins and Mensah gets hurt?
Yeah, right. Okay. I don't know. Something like that. I think James Madison's probably in if they win and if Duke wins, but I don't know, man. It's hard to predict what this committee's going to do. You would think James Madison being ranked this week is a sign that, hey, you got a real path here. But at the same time, if Duke beats Virginia, that's another ranked win for Duke, and they want to avoid the furor that would arise over the ACC champion getting left out. Like, I could see them taking a cop out, and
I've got the spin zone. I've got the rebuttal for when the ACC inevitably cries foul. You got 2 in last year. You're even. You should be, because remember, I told you this last year, like, my only problem with when they let in SMU was not like SMU's undeserving or whatnot. It's like, I watched that league all year. That league stinks. That should be a one big league. Now, the thing that was also somewhat convenient is, like, I think the thing that's interesting about this year versus last year is, last year, it felt like we were reaching to really find the 12. This year, it feels like we're cutting to find the 12.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of teams, a handful of teams that are going to get left out that have pretty compelling cases. Like Texas, really, I know they have the 3 losses. I get it, right? But just imagine, Jeffrey, had they played Oklahoma State instead of Ohio State, I think they'd be in right now because they would have crushed Oklahoma State. They'd be sitting here with 3 wins over top 15 opponents, which no other team in the running can claim. Texas has a legitimate gripe, 3 losses. I think Miami is going to have a legitimate gripe. BYU really could as well if they lose. I'm not convinced Notre Dame deserves to be in. The more I look at it, man, like.
I think what they set up, and I know neither team will have played. I do think what they set up, which is, if what I expect to happen is going to happen, Texas Tech's going to beat BYU again, because I don't think BYU can score on them. They are now going to have to do the thing where Miami and Notre Dame are going to be standing side by side, and they're going to have to actually say that game didn't matter. And even though I know technically under their rules, it could be like, well, just because they're ranked next to each other doesn't mean they're in the same tier. But it's like, man, like I think it's going to be tough to pull that trigger.
No, it will be. I really think, though, that, like, to me, the call me crazy, call me an SEC homer. I just come back to Texas and them having wins over. They're the only team in college football that has two wins over teams that are going to be in this bracket. I mean, no one else does. I mean, Oregon doesn't have a win over anyone who's going to be in this bracket.
Technically, if Tulane wins, Ole Miss will.
Yes, but going into championship weekend. Correct. I mean, Texas doesn't have the benefit of playing for a conference championship.
I don't know. I guess I said this yesterday, and we got to take a break to get to Eric. I view Texas this year the same way that I viewed Ole Miss and Alabama last year. Like, they have the high-profile wins, but it's like, and I get it, one of Ole Miss's wins or losses and one of Alabama's losses was not to to Ohio State or the version of Ohio State. But it's like, man, don't lose to Florida.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the only thing they have to use to keep Texas out of this bracket is the fact that they lost to Florida. But I did think Hunter Yurecek used faulty logic in explaining, well, you know, Texas is the only team that has a loss to a team that is currently not ranked and has never been ranked. Well, are you saying that Alabama's loss to Florida State holds up because Florida State was ranked in week one? I mean, give me a break.
Well, no, like, Alabama's holding up because they led Auburn 17-0.
It's just
that was
I don't know.
That was quite the spin zone.
I agree. There's going to be worthy teams left out over teams that aren't, don't get me wrong. I'd love to see James Madison crash this party. I think it would be hilarious. I won't be mad.
Oh, no.
I won't be mad if it happens.
My thing is, I don't believe they should be in, but I'm fine with them being in. You know what I mean?
Like, look, because
I don't think they play the same sport.
Underdog.
Yeah, they're going to lose to Oregon by 30.
Or even some of the teams that get left out, they'd be a 17-point underdog against. But that's fine. That's fine. I'm okay with it. And I'm not an expansionist either. I just think
I actually think this proves my point. 12 rocks.
It does. Yeah. But the point being, the expansionists will use quality teams getting left out as justification for expansion.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Kastlein joins the program next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is a reminder that shoes are a gift, literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure, or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in, or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores or DSW.com.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
That music means that we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer Eric Hasseltine to the program. Grizzlies and Clippers tomorrow night, 7 p.m. with tip-off with Eric. Eric, you excited to see Chris Paul?
Hang on, bud. I was just getting in my car. Say that again.
You excited to see Chris Paul back in town?
Well, he's not going to be there. So
you don't think he'll make it? I mean, I think
that was pretty wild.
I mean, it sound. I normally don't believe anything James Harden says, but like, yeah. I kind of buy that Harden's like, man, I found out what y'all did. Like, it sounds like it happened literally in the middle of the night.
Yeah, the word I got from someone out there was that I guess he got sideways maybe with Ty Lue. Like being too vocal, and you know, coaches want the locker room. But I mean, why did you bring the guy in?
Right? And did you? Were you surprised by this?
Yeah, I was, because I didn't think he was. Who's he brought in there to mentor? Max Christie, Cam Christie, Max's brother. I mean, he's not going to mentor Harden or Kawhi or Ivica Zubac or Derek Jones Jr. or any of their other starters. So who's he there to mentor? A couple other guys. And you know, look, man, young players are just different these days. I've used this quote a million times. It's like Lionel Hollins once said, it's really hard as a coach or another player to get a guy to accept a role that he's never had in his life before. And that's as a complimentary piece. And if Chris is seeing guys not give all an effort, all that other stuff, maybe that. And, you know, I think for me, seeing him go back there, having watched that, what was that docuseries where it was his summer where he was deciding where to go and he came up with Houston because he was tired of...
Is it starting five? Is that it?
Something like that. But there was a lot of, like, behind-the-scenes cameras with him and his agent or where he wanted to go, and a lot of his complaints were about the, you know, the way the attitude of the team was. I don't think he and Blake Griffin saw eye-to-eye on how serious to take it, whatever it may be. I know this about the guy. I watched him absolutely carve teams up, Grizzlies and other teams included. And at that size, that's really hard to do. He was an incredible floor general, incredible leader on the court. But, you know, as time goes along, if you're not producing and you're giving guys all these, you know, things to do, I could see some pushback. I could see some guys going, yo, dude, you don't even play. Relax. And you're just hanging on for one more year and all this other stuff if you're not part of the big picture. And maybe that was Ty Lue's frustration, is that, you know, Chris Paul ain't going to be there long term. I don't think Chris Paul's getting into coaching. It would be my guess. He may. I mean, I guess it would surprise me, but not a lot, because the amount of money he's made over the years. Like, I just think when you have that kind of generational wealth, that when you're done playing, unless you just miss it that badly, you don't want to be up all night studying game film, talking to assistant coaches, trying to keep the locker room on your side. I mean, that just, when you got, I would guess, you know, hundreds of millions in the bank. I know me, at the time when it hangs up, if I had that, I'm going to be enjoying my life, enjoying my time with my family, and I'll love basketball till the day I die, but I think I'll find a place to love it where I'm not under the microscope, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, you can get satellite dishes at a lot of places.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So, you know, look, it's kind of a shame it worked out the way it did at the end, the way it would just happen seemingly overnight. I mean, I remember seeing the wire line come across. We were on the road. I was like, wait, what just happened? Like, he just played against the Grizzlies not too long ago, and then he was gone. And there was no inkling of it. There was no, this is a mutual parting of the ways. We didn't hear from Chris Paul. So this was a fracture. And to be quite frank and honest, that's that franchise's best player ever. I mean, the best player that ever put on that Clipper uniform was Chris Paul. Now, you can make cases for other guys, and you can make case that maybe James Harden is catching up a little bit right now. But over the run, what he did for that franchise, wow. I mean, that's a lot. So something went seriously wrong, seriously sideways, and they just said, we're just going to wash our hands of this, and we're not going to talk about it again. So that's was kind of weird to me.
I'm curious to see if he even lands anywhere, because a lot of times you see these late career guys get a buyout, but it's like, oh, well, he'll land with such and such a contender in February or whatever. Like, right. Chris Paul at age 40 with his level of production this year, who's going to be lining up to sign him, you know?
The only contender, and I use that term lightly because I think we all see pretty much right now, it seems to be a one-horse race. And if they don't break stride, spit the bit, get hurt, whatever you want to use, the thing, who's knocking off the Thunder? I mean, they're 21-1. The one loss was on the second night of a back-to-back in Portland. Very easy to call that a schedule loss. They happen to everybody. And you also have nights where you're just not on. This team is absolutely crushing teams. So if you're Chris Paul, you've also been in Oklahoma City for a stint for a year. They don't need him. What do they need him for? They don't need Chris Paul back there. A.J. Mitchell has come on this year in his second year out of UC Santa Barbara. He's really good. We didn't see a lot of him last year. Seeing him this year, I saw him in the playoffs and towards the end of the year, and you're like, okay, I can see what they saw in this kid. I didn't see what he was doing, you know, this early part of the season. I mean, he's been really good. And you also still have other guys there that can handle the ball, so you don't need him there. You certainly don't need him with the Lakers, although maybe LeBron says, hey, go get him, but then who do you cut? LeBron's son? That's probably not happening. And then for Houston, that would be the one spot because they don't have a true point guard. But does he want to go back to Houston? He's been there as well. I don't think Denver's a real fit for him, maybe. And then you look in the East, Detroit's not looking to go that route. I don't think Toronto's going to hang on to the number two seed all year long. If they do, I'm happy for Darko Rajakovic, but I just see other like teams like Cleveland making their move up. But I don't know. I mean, maybe, but where does he want to go? Where is he willing to go? What coaches is he willing to play for? The fact he hasn't spoken a word, really, unless I've missed it, I think that says a lot. I think he's done. I think he's going to ride off in the sunset. He's going to be at the top of the charts and, you know, in assists and steals, and he scored a ton of points. And, you know, 5 years from the end of this year, he's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. There's no two ways about it, but I just don't know that he's going anywhere.
Is he in the Grizz Haters Hall of Fame? Where do you think he ranks? Where do you think he ranks in terms of like public enemy all time? Where do you think he ranks?
Okay, so this would be a fun segment to do one day, and I guess we're going to do part of it now. But this would be really fun to look back at the guys that you just. I mean, I'm not talking killers.
Right. This is not the CJ McCollum category. This is the literally made
CJ McCollum. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm thinking of the, when you saw this person, your blood pressure rose.
Okay, well, CJ McCollum with the vice president of Zach LaVine, they run that club,
yeah.
Man. That's a known fact. And back in the day, it was Tim Duncan and Dirk Nowitzki. So I think if you start, are you going all the way back to the first years?
I am counting, I'm going to say, let's say post-pyramid.
Post-pyramid, I think you still have to put Dirk Nowitzki in there just because he just broke Grizzlies fans'
hearts. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I always think about, like, even in that game where, because I remember vividly, my brother and I were at that playoff game where the Grizzlies were about to get their first win, and I remember going to my brother, how do we lose this? Because I think we were up like 7 with, what, like 50 seconds or something like that. I was like, how do we lose this? And then as soon as Dirk gets the ball, I was like, oh, that's how. I had a begrudging respect for him, but I think you're right. I think maybe in general he's probably up there.
So he wasn't as abrasive. So if you were going to give me a starting five then of guys the Grizz Nation hates, I think you start a point guard probably with Chris Paul.
Yes.
I just think it's there or Russell Westbrook.
The five that came to mind were Paul, Westbrook, Draymond, Blake.
Clay.
Is there...
What about Iggy? Andre Iguodala?
Iguodala. But that became...
You hate
That was after
you
the
hate
fact.
Him for just being
right.
Yeah, he was done. He did. And look, again, I get Andre Iguodala like saying I don't want to get traded to Memphis. Look, I mean, that's been the case here forever. Like, players have not said anything. They have not gone like, hey, boy, I'd really love to play in Memphis one day. A couple have. But for the most part, they're like, I don't want to go there. I live in New York or I live in L.A. And they're in the big city lifestyle. And that's okay, cool. If that's your personality, it's a different place. We've talked about this all the time. It's what bonded the teams and the fans together. It's a different place. This isn't flashy. This isn't, you know, walk down the street and see a Gucci, a Fendi, a Prada store and, you know, a restaurant that charges you $47 for a 4-ounce filet. This is a hard-nosed, tough community that loves its basketball. Now, when players play here, they respect that. They respected the crowds. They respected the energy that was in, you know, I guess the pyramid the last year and then the FedEx Forum for sure. So Iguodala to me was just basically saying, hey, at the end of my career, I don't want to go play for them. Maybe he just felt like they didn't have a chance of winning a title. He had business ventures in the
Well, he's an entrepreneur, he's an author, he's a thought leader, he's a winemaker, he was all that blowhard. I just thought
okay,
of what,
okay, so
hang on, I got one. Can we include him if he played for the Grizzlies? Does Chandler need to be on the list?
Ooh.
As a player, there was one game you hated him when he made 10 threes. And then probably the other most hated point guard, Patrick Beverley, decided that it wouldn't be Chandler's last shot in that game, and the Grizzlies were very thankful of that because Beverly missed and the Grizzlies won like an 88-87 game where Chandler Parsons made 10 threes in Houston one half. I think you got to go opponents and when they played against them. Guys that came here and it didn't work out, that's not right. So as opponents, hatred from the fan base, I think Tim Duncan could make that list just because he was so methodical and so good that people just couldn't stand it. I think Blake Griffin 100% because of the rivalry with Z-Bo. I think Matt Barnes before he played here was that way.
Oh, yeah.
Draymond certainly is that way. Chris Paul would be there. Westbrook would be there. I can't think of too many from the East because you didn't see them enough. You didn't build a rivalry. Maybe Trae Young. Grizzlies fans don't like Trae Young that much. I'm trying to think of other teams on the West Coast that you had those rivals. You know, no one really hated Damian Lillard. Nobody really hated Karl Anthony Towns. They just kind of thought he was, you know, wasn't as good as he truly is. But maybe Rudy Gobert. I think the one you might be surprised at was Yusuf Nurkic, who gave Mark Gasol a ton of grief one night thanks to Darrell Arthur. And so he came here, and everybody heard that story. He was persona non grata when he was with the Nuggets at that time. But, I mean, he's in that conversation. There's no doubt. My thing with it is, I had a chance to meet him when he was with New Orleans with Elliot Perry because he and Elliot had formed a bond, you know, through talks and things like that. And I will say this for the guy. He's the type of guy I would want leading my team because he was cool as a fan off the court, does a ton of charitable work, great with the people, but demands his, you know, teammates have a level of excellence. And when he's on the court, he just wants to crush you. He wants to eviscerate you. I will never forget he looked over at Mark Iveroni one night, and Iveroni was calling for all of our guards to go under the screen when he had the ball at the top. When the pick came up, whoever was setting, I think it was Tyson Chandler at the time, and he kept calling under, and Chris Paul hit like two straight jumpers because he was wide open from the top, and he looks over and he goes, hey, coach, and finally Iveroni looks at him and he goes, you keep going under the screen, I'll get you fired tonight. And I went, oh, damn. I looked at Iveroni, and when he had no reply, I'm like, yeah, we got a problem. That might be an issue right there.
Well,
so I got a lot of respect for the guy. It's a Hall of Fame career. But as a broadcaster, man, I got sick of seeing that fadeaway 17-footer over a 6'8" guy that you're like, how does this dude get this shot off? How?
I think weirdly... Okay, so I know we talked about McCollum being in a different category because of Grizz Killer, but do we maybe have to put him on the list simply because he broke Mike's face?
There are those that would argue that. I would go to what was worse was Draymond Green landing on Mike and rolling over on his face and then trying to say, oh, I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't hurt somebody like that. but you'd kick him in the stones if you could, like you did to Steven Adams. So look, we all hated Steven Adams at one point.
Well, I was about to say, but we learned. Did y'all see Draymond? Did y'all see this week? Mark wanted to submit this in for Tell Your Story, but we didn't get to it. So Draymond was on his podcast complaining about not being able to go to the birth of his latest child. Well, he skipped a Warriors game to go watch LeBron break the scoring record. But you're really telling me the Warriors were like, absolutely not, Draymond. At this point in your career, you cannot miss a game to go see the birth of your child. That feels like the ultimate, like, well, I mean, honey, I really want to be there, but I mean, I have work. What do you want me to do?
Right. I can't, to be honest with you, I can't see any team ever denying someone to see the birth of their child. I just can't. I've never seen it. I've never heard it. And you gotta know if that happens, these guys talk. That gets through the players, you know, union and guys talk and agents, and that's a nail in the we're not going there type thing. So no, I can't believe it. I didn't know he had a podcast. I don't hear him talk about it all the time. And,
fortunately, this was one.
Check that out.
The only good thing about me not having social media is because I can't keep up with any news anymore. But the best thing is I do not stumble upon Draymond podcast clips anymore. So Mark has to when Mark sees one, he sends it to me immediately because he knows it'll get a reaction out of me.
I'll say this, and I've said this every time they've played that guy. I don't blame him for doing what he does because he has intimidated officials his entire career.
No, I blame the league.
He gets away with saying things to them. Gets away with saying things to them other players can't. He gets away with physicality other players can't. Until they stop it, I said every time we play him, I said until they stop it, why would he stop doing it? Why would he stop doing it? Now the debate goes on whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. I think he's going to get into the Hall of Fame. Do I truly believe he's a Hall of Famer? I mean, half the game is defense, and when he was in his prime, he was arguably the best defender in the world.
So, I don't even think he was the best defender on his team.
He was pretty good. Clay was really good, too.
I think Clay was overall the better defender.
Yeah, so... Well, I mean, yeah, no, it's wild news. And then they come in here tomorrow night, and obviously the Grizzlies trying to get back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
So you want to start a business? You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.